Chapter 5. The Way to a Fortunate Rebirth. Introduction. In his account of his noble quest, the Buddha says that when he gazed out upon the world soon after his enlightenment, he saw that sentient beings are like lotus flowers at various stages of growth within a pond. See page 71. While some beings are like lotuses at or near the surface of the pond, capable of awakening merely by being exposed to his world-transcending teachings, the vast majority of people who encounter the Dhamma are like lotuses growing deep below the surface. These lotuses benefit from the sunlight and use its energy to sustain their life, yet still need time to reach the surface and blossom. So too, the great multitude of people who hear the Buddha's teachings and establish faith must still nurture their wholesome qualities with the radiant energy of the Dhamma before their mind streams become mature enough to attain direct realization. This process ordinarily requires many lives, and thus such people have to take a long-term approach to their spiritual development. While practicing the way to liberation, they must avoid a rebirth in the unfortunate realms, and win successive rebirths blessed with material security, happiness, and opportunities for further spiritual progress. These benefits, the enhancing conditions for spiritual development in the Dhamma, come about by the acquisition of punya, or merit, a word that signifies the capacity of wholesome action to yield beneficial results within the cycle of rebirths. According to the Buddha's teaching, the cosmos, with its many realms of sentient existence, is governed at all levels by immutable laws, physical, biological, psychological, and ethical. The process by which sentient beings migrate from one state of existence to another is likewise lawful. It is regulated by a law that works in two principal ways. First, it connects our actions with a particular realm of rebirth that corresponds to our actions. And second, it determines the relations between our actions and the quality of our experience within the particular realm into which we have been reborn. The governing factor in this process, the factor that makes the entire process a lawful one, is a force called kama, Sanskrit, karma. The word kama literally means action, but technically it refers to volitional action. As the Buddha says, it is volitional, sitana, that I call kama. For having willed, sitayitva, one acts by body, speech, and mind. Kama thus denotes deeds that originate from volition. Such volition may remain purely mental, generating mental kama that occurs as thoughts, plans, and desires. Or it may come to expression outwardly through manifest bodily and verbal actions. It may seem that our deeds, once performed, perish and vanish without leaving behind any traces apart from their visible impact on other people and our environment. However, according to the Buddha, all morally determinate volitional actions create a potential to bring forth results, vipaka, or fruits, phala, that correspond to the ethical quality of those actions. This capacity of our deeds to produce the morally appropriate results is what is meant by kama. Our deeds generate kama, a potential to produce fruits that correspond to their own intrinsic tendencies. Then, when internal and external conditions are suitable, the kama ripens and produces the appropriate fruits. In ripening, the kama rebounds upon us for good or for harm, depending on the moral quality of the original action. This may happen either later in the same life in which the action was done, in the next life, or in some distant future life. The one thing that is certain is that as long as we remain within samsara, any stored up kama of ours will be capable of ripening so long as it has not yet produced its due results. On the basis of its ethical quality, the Buddha distinguishes kama into two major categories, the unwholesome, akusala, and the wholesome, kusala. Unwholesome kama is action that is spiritually detrimental to the agent, morally reprehensible, and potentially productive in an unfortunate rebirth and painful results. The criterion for judging an action to be unwholesome is its underlying motives, the roots from which it springs. There are three unwholesome roots: greed, hatred, and delusion. From these, there arises a wide variety of secondary defilements, states such as anger, hostility, envy, selfishness, arrogance, pride, presumption, and laziness. And from the root defilements and secondary defilements arise defiled actions. Wholesome kama, on the other hand, is action that is spiritually beneficial and morally commendable. It is action that ripens in happiness and good fortune. Its underlying motives are the three wholesome roots: non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, which may be expressed more positively as generosity, loving-kindness, and wisdom. Whereas actions springing from the unwholesome roots are necessarily bound to the world of repeated birth and death, actions springing from the wholesome roots may be of two kinds: mundane and world-transcending. The mundane, lokiya, wholesome actions have the potential to produce a fortunate rebirth and pleasant results within the round of rebirths. The world-transcending or supra-mundane, lokuttara, wholesome actions, namely the kama generated by developing the Noble Eightfold Path and the other aids to enlightenment, lead to enlightenment and to liberation from the round of rebirths. This is the kama that dismantles the entire process of karmic causation. The correlation between kama and its results is indicated in a general way in text 5.1.1. This sutta refers to unwholesome action as dark kama, and mundane wholesome action as bright kama. It also refers to a type of kama that is both dark and bright. Strictly speaking, this does not denote a single action that simultaneously partakes of both unwholesome and wholesome characteristics. Technically, such a thing is impossible, for an action must be one or the other. The combined kama refers to the conduct of a person who intermittently engages in both unwholesome and wholesome behavior. Finally, the sutta speaks of a fourth type of kama that is neither dark nor bright. This is the action of developing the Noble Eightfold Path, the wholesome world-transcending kama. It cannot be emphasized strongly enough that for early Buddhism, an understanding and acceptance of this principle of kama and its fruit is an essential component of right view. Right view has two aspects: the world-bound or mundane aspect, which pertains to life within the world, and the supramundane or world-transcending aspect, which pertains to the path of liberation. The world-transcending right view includes an understanding of the Four Noble Truths, dependent origination, and the three marks of impermanence, suffering, and non-self. For early Buddhism, this world-transcending right view cannot be taken up in isolation from mundane right view. Rather, it presupposes and depends upon the sound support of mundane right view, which means a firm conviction in the validity of the law of kama and its unfolding through the process of rebirths. To accept the law of kama entails a radical transformation in our understanding of our relationship to the world. The twin doctrines of kama and rebirth enable us to see that the world in which we live is, in important respects, an external reflection of the internal cosmos of the mind. This does not mean that the external world can be reduced to a mental projection in the way proposed by certain types of philosophical idealism. However, taken in conjunction, these two doctrines do show that the conditions under which we live closely correspond to the karmic tendencies of our minds. The reason why a living being is reborn into a particular realm is because in a previous life that being has generated the kama, or volitional action, that leads to rebirth into that realm. Thus, in the final analysis, all the realms of existence have been formed, fashioned, and sustained by the mental activity of living beings. As the Buddha says, for beings obstructed by ignorance and hindered by craving, kama is the field, consciousness the seed, and craving the moisture, for consciousness to be established in a new realm of existence, either inferior, middling, or superior. Anguttara Nikaya 3.76.1. 223. The next selection, text 512, draws a finer distinction among the types of unwholesome and wholesome kama. The text enumerates 10 primary instances of each class. Here they are called respectively unrighteous conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, and righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. But they are usually known as the 10 pathways of unwholesome and wholesome kama. The 10 are subdivided by way of the 3 doors of action, body, speech, and mind. Taking the unwholesome first, there are 3 kinds of bodily misconduct: killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. 4 kinds of verbal misconduct: lying, malicious speech, harsh speech, and idle chatter or gossip. And 3 kinds of mental misconduct: covetousness, ill will, and wrong view. The 10 courses of wholesome action are their exact opposites: abstinence from the 3 kinds of bodily misconduct, abstinence from the 4 kinds of verbal misconduct, and non-covetousness, goodwill, and right view. According to the sutta, the 10 types of unwholesome kama are the reason that beings are reborn in the bad destinations after death. The 10 types of wholesome kama are the reason that beings are reborn in the good destinations after death. As the sutta shows, the 10 types of wholesome kama are the support not only for a heavenly rebirth, but also for the destruction of the taints, the attainment of liberation. The concluding paragraphs of this sutta give us a brief survey of Buddhist cosmology. The Buddhist cosmos is divided into 3 broad realms: the sense sphere realm, Kamadhatu, the form realm, Rupadhatu, and the formless realm, Arupadhatu, each comprising a range of subsidiary planes. The sense sphere realm, our realm, is so called because the beings reborn here are strongly driven by sensual desire. The realm is divided into 2 levels, the bad destinations and the good destinations. The bad destinations, or states of misery, apaya, are 3 in number. The hells, states of intense torment, see Majjhima Nikaya 129 and 130, not included in this anthology. The animal kingdom, and the sphere of spirits, Peti Visaya, being afflicted with incessant hunger, thirst, and other sufferings. These are the realms of retribution for the 10 unwholesome paths of Kama. The good destinations in the sense sphere realm are the human world and the 6 sensual heavenly planes. The latter are the devas in the heaven of the 4 great kings, who are presided over by 4 powerful devas, namely the 4 great kings. The Tavatisma devas, presided over by Sakha, a devotee of the Buddha who is faithful but prone to negligence. See the Sakha Samyutta, Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 11. The Yama devas, the devas of the Tusita heaven, the abode of a bodhisatta before his final birth. The Nimanarati devas, the gods who delight in creating. And the Parani Mita Vasavati devas, the gods who control what is created by others. The karmic cause for rebirth into the good destinations of the sense sphere realm is the practice of the 10 courses of wholesome action. In the form realm, the grosser types of material form are absent. Its denizens, known as Brahmas, enjoy bliss, power, luminosity, and vitality far superior to the beings in the sense sphere realm. The form realm consists of 16 planes. These are the objective counterparts of the 4 jhanas. Attainment of the first jhana leads to rebirth among Brahma's assembly, the ministers of Brahma, and the Mahabrahmas, according to whether it is developed to an inferior, middling, or superior degree. The second jhana, attained in the same 3 degrees, leads respectively to rebirth among the devas of limited radiance, of measureless radiance, and of streaming radiance. The third jhana, attained in the same 3 degrees, leads respectively to rebirth among the devas of limited glory, of measureless glory, and of refulgent glory. The fourth jhana ordinarily leads to rebirth among the devas of great fruit. But if developed with a feeling of disgust for perception, It will conduce to rebirth among the non-percipient beings, beings who lack perception. The form realm also comprises 5 planes reserved exclusively for the rebirth of non-returners. See pages 379 through 380. Called the Pure Abodes, Aviha, Atapa, Sudasa, Sudasi, and Akanita. In each of the subtle form planes, the lifespan is said to be of enormous duration and to increase significantly with each higher plane. In the third realm of existence, material form is non-existent and bare mental processes exist. Hence, it is called the formless realm. This realm consists of 4 planes, which are the objective counterparts of the 4 formless meditative attainments, after which they are named. The base of the infinity of space, the base of the infinity of consciousness, the base of nothingness, and the base of neither perception nor non-perception. The lifespans ascribed to these realms are respectively 20,000, 40,000, 60,000, and 84,000 great eons. For the duration of 1 eon, see text 143. For Buddhist cosmology, existence in every realm, being the product of a kama with a finite potency, is necessarily impermanent. Beings take rebirth into a realm appropriate for their kama or deeds, experience the good or bad results, and then, when the generative kama has spent its force, they pass away to take rebirth elsewhere as determined by still another kama that has found the opportunity to ripen. Hence, the torments of hell as well as the joys of heaven, no matter how long they may last, are bound to pass. The Buddha guides those whose spiritual faculties are still tender to aspire for a human or heavenly rebirth, and teaches them the lines of conduct that conduce to the fulfillment of their aspirations. But he urges those with mature faculties to make a determined effort to put an end to the aimless wandering of samsara and reach the deathless, nibbana, which transcends all conditioned planes of being. While the first 2 texts in this chapter establish a general correlation between kama and spheres of rebirth, text 513 specifies the underlying karmic causes for the manifest differences in human life. It does so with reference to a well-known saying of the Buddha: beings are owners of their kama, heirs of their kama. They originate from their kama, are bound to their kama, have their kama as their refuge. It is kama that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. The sutta proposes to explain this statement with regard to 7 pairs of contrasting qualities observed among people. This text also introduces a distinction between 2 types of consequences that an unwholesome kama can have. The more powerful is rebirth in a bad destination. The other is unpleasant fruits within the human state. For example, a short lifespan for one who in an earlier life killed living beings. An analogous distinction obtains among the consequences that a wholesome kama can have. The more powerful is rebirth in a heavenly world. The other is pleasant fruits within the human state. The next section deals with merit, punya. Wholesome kama capable of yielding favorable results within the cycle of rebirths. Merit produces mundane benefits, such as a good rebirth, wealth, beauty, and success. It also serves as an enhancing condition for supramundane benefits, that is, for attaining the stages along the path to enlightenment. Hence, as seen in text 5.2.1, the Buddha urges his disciples to cultivate merit, referring to his own cultivation of merit over many previous lives as an example. The Nikayas concisely organize the types of merit into 3 bases of meritorious deeds. Punya kiriyavatu, giving, moral discipline, and meditation. Text 5.2.2 connects the basis of merit with the types of rebirth to which they lead. In the Indian religious context, the practice of meritorious deeds revolves around faith in certain objects regarded as sacred and spiritually empowering, capable of serving as a support for the acquisition of merit. For followers of the Buddha's teaching, these are the 3 jewels: the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Text 5.2.3 extols these as each supreme in its particular sphere. The the Buddha is supreme among persons, the Dhamma among teachings, and the Sangha among religious communities. The text proposes an interesting twofold distinction of the Dhamma jewel. Among all conditioned things, Dhamma Sanghata, the Noble Eightfold Path is supreme. Among all things conditioned or unconditioned, Dhamma Sanghata va Asanghata va. Nibbana is supreme. Merely having confidence in the three jewels, that is, reverential trust and devotion toward them, is itself a basis of merit. But as the verses attached to the sutta make clear, the Buddha and the Sangha additionally function as the recipients of gifts. And in this role, they further enable donors to acquire merit leading to the fulfillment of their virtuous wishes. More will be said about this aspect of merit just below. The following sections of this chapter elaborate on the three bases of merit individually, beginning in section 3 with giving or generosity, dana. The Buddha often treated giving as the most rudimentary virtue of the spiritual life, for giving serves to break down the egocentric frame of mind on the basis of which we habitually interact with others. Contrary to what a Western reader might expect, however, giving, for early Buddhism, does not mean simply philanthropic charity directed toward the poor and disadvantaged. While it includes this, the practice of giving has a more context-specific meaning rooted in the social structure of Indian religiosity. In India, during the Buddha's time, those who sought to fathom the deepest truths of existence and attain release from the round of birth and death usually renounced home and family, relinquished their secure place in the cohesive Indian social order, and adopted the precarious life of the homeless wanderer. With shaved heads or matted locks, clad in ochre or white robes, or going naked, they would move from place to place without fixed abode, except during the 3 months of the rainy season, when they would settle in simple huts, caves, or other lodgings. Such homeless wanderers, known as samanas, ascetics, or paribhajakas, wanderers, did not perform any remunerative services, but depended upon the charity of householders for their livelihood. The lay devotees provided them with their material requisites, robes, food, lodgings, and medicines. Doing so in the confidence that such services were a source of merit that would help them advance a few steps farther in the direction of final emancipation. When the Buddha appeared on the scene, he adopted this mode of life for himself. Once he commenced his work as a spiritual teacher, he established his Sangha on the same principle. The bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, the monks and nuns, would depend on the charity of others for their material support, and they would reciprocate by offering their donors the more precious gift of the Dhamma, the teaching of the lofty path that leads to happiness, peace, and final liberation. Text 5.3.5 testifies to this principle of mutual support. By accepting the gifts of lay people, the monastics give them the opportunity to acquire merit. Since the volume of merit generated by the act of giving is considered to be proportional to the worthiness of the recipient, when the recipients are the Buddha and those following in his footsteps, the merit becomes immeasurable. See Majjhima Nikaya 142, not included in this anthology. For this reason, the Savaka Sangha, the spiritual community of noble disciples, is called the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Anuttaram Punya Ketam Lokasa. Gifts to the Sangha, it is said, conduce to great blessings. They lead to one's welfare and happiness for a long time, and can bring rebirth in the heavenly worlds. But as text 5.3.6 reminds us, this is true only for the morally pure, not for the immoral. This leads to the next base of merit, moral discipline, sila, which for early Buddhism requires the undertaking of precepts. The most basic moral guidelines inculcated in the Nikayas are the five precepts, the training rules to abstain from taking life, stealing, sexual misconduct, false speech, and the use of intoxicants. These are mentioned in text 5.4.1, which, by an interesting twist in terminology, speaks of them as pristine, traditional, ancient gifts, thus implicitly subsuming sila under dana, The reason the observance of precepts is a form of giving is because one who undertakes precepts will be giving to immeasurable beings freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. And as a karmic consequence, he himself will enjoy immeasurable freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. While the Buddha enjoins observance of the five precepts upon lay followers as a full-time obligation, he recommends a more stringent type of formal practice for the Uposatha, the observance days determined by the lunar calendar. The full moon day, the new moon day, and the two half-moon days. Of the four, in Buddhist countries, today it is the full moon day that is given priority. On these occasions, devout lay Buddhists undertake eight precepts, the usual five, but with a third changed to complete sexual abstinence, augmented by three other precepts that emulate the training rules of a novice monk or nun. The eight precepts, enumerated in text 5, 4, 2, augment the training in sila as a moral observance with a training in self-restraint, simplicity, and contentment. In this respect, they prepare the disciple for the training of the mind undertaken in the practice of meditation, the third base of merit. The practice of meditation is not only the heart of the path to liberation, but a source of merit in its own right. Wholesome meditation practices, even those that do not directly lead to insight, help to purify the grosser levels of mental defilement and uncover deeper dimensions of the mind's potential purity and radiance. Text 551 declares that the type of meditation that is most fruitful for the production of mundane merit is the development of loving kindness, metta bhavana. The practice of loving kindness, however, is only one among a set of four meditations called the Divine Abodes, Brahma Vihara, or immeasurable states, appamanya. The development of loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity, which are to be extended boundlessly to all sentient beings. Briefly, loving kindness, metta, is the wish for the welfare and happiness of all beings. Compassion, karuna, the feeling of empathy for all those afflicted with suffering. Altruistic joy, mudita, the feeling of happiness at the success and good fortune of others. And equanimity, upekkha, a balanced reaction to joy and misery, which protects one from emotional agitation. These meditations are said to be the means to rebirth in the Brahma world. See text 552. While the Brahmins regarded the Brahma world as the highest attainment, for the Buddha, it was just one exalted sphere of rebirth. The concentration arisen from these meditations, however, can also be used as a basis for cultivating the wisdom of insight, and insight culminates in liberation. Text 553, the last selection of this chapter, thus grades the different types of merit according to their fruits, from giving, with the various kinds of gifts ranked according to the spiritual status of the recipients, through the going for refuge and the five precepts, to the meditation on loving kindness. Then, at the very end, it declares that the most fruitful deed among them all is the perception of impermanence. The perception of impermanence, however, belongs to a different order. It is so fruitful not because it yields pleasant mundane results within the round of rebirths, but because it leads to the wisdom of insight that cuts the chains of bondage and brings the realization of complete emancipation, Nibbana. Chapter 5, The Way to a Fortunate Rebirth. Part 1, The Law of Kama. Verse 1, Four Kinds of Kama. There are, O monks, these four kinds of kama, declared by me after I had realized them for myself by direct knowledge. What for? There is dark kama, with dark results. There is bright kama, with bright results. There is kama that is dark and bright, with dark and bright results. There is kama that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results. Which leads to the destruction of kama? And what, monks, is dark kama with dark results? Here, monks, someone generates an afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in an afflictive world. when he is reborn in an afflictive world. Afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by afflictive contacts, he experiences an afflictive feeling, extremely painful, as, for example, the beings in hell experience. This is called dark karma with dark results. And what, monks, is bright karma with bright results? Here, monks, someone generates a non-afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in a non-afflictive world. When he is reborn in a non-afflictive world, non-afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by non-afflictive contacts, he experiences a non-afflictive feeling, extremely pleasant, as, for example, the devas of refulgent glory experience. This is called bright karma with bright results. And what, monks, is dark and bright karma with dark and bright results? Here, monks, someone generates both an afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind, and a non-afflictive volitional formation of body, speech, or mind. Having done so, he is reborn in a world that is both afflictive and non-afflictive. When he is reborn in such a world, both afflictive and non-afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by such contacts, he experiences both an afflictive feeling and a non-afflictive feeling, a mixture and conglomeration of pleasure and pain. As, for example, human beings and some devas and some beings in the lower world experience. This is called dark and bright karma, with dark and bright results. And what, monks, is karma that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the destruction of karma? The volition to abandon this dark karma with dark results, and to abandon the bright karma with bright results, and to abandon the dark and bright karma with dark and bright results. This is called the karma that is neither dark nor bright, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the destruction of karma. These, monks, are the four kinds of karma declared by me, after I had realized them for myself by direct knowledge. Anguttara Nikaya, 4, 232. 2, 230 through 232. Verse 2. Why beings fare as they do after death? 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was wandering by stages in the Kosalan country with a large sangha of monks, and eventually he arrived at a Kosalan Brahmin village named Sala. 2. The Brahmin householders of Sala heard. It is said that the ascetic Gotama, the Sakyan's son who went forth from a Sakyan clan, has been wandering in the Kosalan country with a large sangha of monks and has come to Sala. Now a good report of Master Gotama has been circulating thus, that Blessed One is an arahant, as in text 3.2, that is perfectly complete and purified. Now it is good to see such arahants. 3. Then the Brahmin householders of Sala went to the Blessed One. Some paid homage to him and sat down to one side. Some exchanged greetings with him and, after their greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. Some saluted him reverentially and sat down to one side. Some remained silent and sat down to one side. 4. When they were seated, they said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, what is the cause and condition why some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell? And what is the cause and condition why some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world? 5. Householders, it is by reason of unrighteous conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. It is by reason of righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. 6. We do not understand the detailed meaning of Master Gotama's statement, which he has spoken in brief without expounding the detailed meaning. It would be good if Master Gotama would teach us the Dhamma, so that we might understand the detailed meaning of his statement. Then, householders, listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, venerable sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this. 7. Householders, there are 3 kinds of unrighteous bodily conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. There are 4 kinds of unrighteous verbal conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. There are 3 kinds of unrighteous mental conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. 8. And now, householders, are there 3 kinds of unrighteous bodily conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone kills living beings. He is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. He takes what is not given. He takes by way of theft the wealth and property of others in the village or forest. He commits sexual misconduct. He has intercourse with women who are protected by their mother, father, mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives, who have a husband, who are protected by law, and even with those already engaged. That is how there are 3 kinds of unrighteous bodily conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. 9. And how, householders, are there 4 kinds of unrighteous verbal conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma? Here someone speaks falsehood. When summoned to a court, or to a meeting, or to his relative's presence, or to his guild, or to the royal family's presence, and questioned as a witness thus, "So, good man, tell what you know." Not knowing, he says, "I know." Or knowing, he says, "I do not know." Not seeing, he says, "I see." Or seeing, he says, "I do not see." In full awareness, he speaks falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. He speaks maliciously. He repeats elsewhere what he has heard here, in order to divide those people from these, or he repeats to these people what he has heard elsewhere, in order to divide these people from those. Thus, he is one who divides those who are united, a creator of divisions, who enjoys discord, rejoices in discord, delights in discord, a speaker of words that create discord. He speaks harshly. He utters such words as are rough, hard, hurtful to others, offensive to others, bordering on anger, not conducive to concentration. He engages in idle chatter. He speaks at the wrong time, speaks what is not fact, speaks what is useless, speaks contrary to the Dhamma and the discipline. At the wrong time, he speaks such words as are worthless, unreasonable, immoderate, and unbeneficial. This is how there are 4 kinds of unrighteous verbal conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. 10. And how, householders, are there 3 kinds of unrighteous mental conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma? Here someone is covetous. He covets the wealth and property of those thus, "Oh, may what belongs to another be mine." Or he has a mind of ill will and intentions of hate thus, "May these beings be slain and slaughtered. May they be cut off, perish, or be annihilated." Or he has wrong view, distorted vision thus, "There is nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed, no fruit or result of good and bad actions, no this world, no other world, no mother, no father, no beings who are reborn spontaneously, no good and virtuous ascetics and Brahmins in the world, who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world." That is how there are 3 kinds of unrighteous mental conduct, conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. So, householders, it is by reason of such unrighteous conduct, such conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. 11. Householders, there are three kinds of righteous bodily conduct. Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. There are four kinds of righteous verbal conduct. Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. There are three kinds of righteous mental conduct. Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 12. And how, householders, are there three kinds of righteous bodily conduct? Conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. Here, someone abandoning the destruction of life abstains from the destruction of life. With rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful, he dwells compassionate to all living beings, abandoning the taking of what is not given. He abstains from taking what is not given. He does not take by way of theft the wealth and property of others in the village or in the forest. Abandoning sexual misconduct, he abstains from sexual misconduct. He does not have intercourse with women who are protected by their mother, father, mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives who have a husband who are protected by law, or with those already engaged. That is how there are three kinds of righteous bodily conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 13. And how, householders, are there four kinds of righteous verbal conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone abandoning false speech abstains from false speech. When summoned to a court, or to a meeting, or to his relative's presence, or to his guild, or to the royal family's presence, and questioned as a witness thus, "So, good man, tell what you know." Not knowing, he says, "I do not know." Or knowing, he says, "I know." Not seeing, he says, "I do not see." Or seeing, he says, "I see." He does not in full awareness speak falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. Abandoning malicious speech, he abstains from malicious speech. He does not repeat elsewhere what he has heard here in order to divide those people from these, nor does he repeat to these people what he has heard elsewhere in order to divide these people from those. Thus, he is one who reunites those who are divided, a promoter of friendships, who enjoys concord, rejoices in concord, delights in concord, a speaker of words that promote concord. Abandoning harsh speech, he abstains from harsh speech. He speaks such words as are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many, and agreeable to many. Abandoning idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. He speaks at the right time, speaks what is fact, speaks on what is good, speaks on the Dhamma and the discipline. At the right time, he speaks such words as are worth recording, reasonable, moderate, and beneficial. That is how there are four kinds of righteous verbal conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 14. And how, householders, are there three kinds of righteous mental conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma? Here, someone is not covetous. He does not covet the wealth and property of others thus. Oh, may what belongs to another be mine. His mind is without ill will, and he has intentions free from hate thus. May these beings be free from enmity, affliction, and anxiety. May they live happily. He has right view, undistorted vision thus. There is what is given and what is offered and what is sacrificed. There is fruit and result of good and bad actions. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are beings who are reborn spontaneously. There are good and virtuous ascetics and Brahmins in the world who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. That is how there are three kinds of righteous mental conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. So, householders, it is by reason of such righteous conduct, such conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, that some beings here, on the breakup of the body, after death, are reborn in a good destination, even in a heavenly world. 15. If, householders, one who observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, should wish, "Oh, that on the breakup of the body, after death, may I be reborn in the company of well-to-do nobles," it is possible that, on the breakup of the body, after death, he will be reborn in the company of well-to-do nobles. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 16 through 17. If, householders, one who observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, should wish, oh, that on the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn in the company of well-to-do Brahmins, in the company of well-to-do householders. It is possible that, on the breakup of the body, after death, he will be reborn in the company of well-to-do householders. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 18 through 42. If, householders, one who observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, should wish, oh, that on the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn in the company of the devas of the realm of the four great kings, in the company of the Tavatimsa devas, the Yama devas, the Tusita devas, the devas who delight in creating, the devas who wield power over others' creations, the devas of Brahma's company, the devas of radiance, the devas of limited radiance, the devas of immeasurable radiance, the devas of streaming radiance, the devas of glory, the devas of limited glory, the devas of immeasurable glory, the devas of refulgent glory, the devas of great fruit, the Aviha devas, the Atapa devas, the Sudasa devas, the Sudasi devas, the Akanitha devas, the devas of the base of the infinity of space, the devas of the base of the infinity of consciousness, the devas of the base of nothingness, the devas of the base of neither perception nor non-perception. It is possible that on the breakup of the body, after death, he will be reborn in the company of the devas of the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 43. If, householders, one who observes conduct in accordance with the Dhamma, righteous conduct, should wish, oh, by realizing it for myself with direct knowledge, may I, in this very life, enter upon and dwell in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom that is taintless with the destruction of the taints. It is possible that by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this very life he will enter upon and dwell in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints. Why is that? Because he observes righteous conduct, conduct in accordance with the Dhamma. 44. When this was said, the Brahmin householders of Sala said to the Blessed One, Magnificent Master Gotama, Magnificent Master Gotama, Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the darkness so that those with good eyesight can see forms. We now go for refuge to Master Gotama, to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of monks. Let Master Gotama accept us as lay followers who have gone for refuge from today until life's end. Majhima Nikaya, 41. Salayaka Sutta, 1, 286 through 290. Verse 3, Kama and its fruits. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. 2. Then the Brahmin student Subha, Todaya's son, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and asked the Blessed One. 3. Master Gotama, why is it that human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? For people are seen to be short-lived and long-lived, sickly and healthy, ugly and beautiful, without influence and influential, poor and wealthy, low-born and high-born, stupid and wise. Why is it, Master Gotama, that human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? 4. Student. Beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, are bound to their actions, have their actions as their refuge. It is action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. I do not understand in detail the meaning of Master Gotama's statement, which he spoke in brief without expounding the meaning in detail. It would be good if Master Gotama would teach me the Dhamma, so that I might understand in detail the meaning of his statement. Then, student, listen, and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, sir, Supa replied. The Blessed One said this. 5. Here, student, some man or woman kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the breakup of the body, after death, he is reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. But if on the breakup of the body, after death, he is not reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is short-lived. This is the way, student, that leads to short life. Namely, one kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. 6. But here, student, some man or woman, abandoning the destruction of life, abstains from the destruction of life, with rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful. He dwells compassionate to all living beings. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the breakup of the body, after death, he is reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. But if on the breakup of the body, after death, he is not reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is long-lived. This is the way, student, that leads to long life. Namely, abandoning the destruction of life. One abstains from the destruction of life, with rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful. One dwells compassionate to all living beings. 7. Here, student, some man or woman is given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the breakup of the body, after death, he is reborn in a state of misery. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is sickly. This is the way, student, that leads to sickliness. Namely, one is given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. 8. But here, student, some man or woman is not given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the breakup of the body after death, he is reborn in a good destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is healthy. This is the way, student, that leads to health. Namely, one is not given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. 9. Here, student, some man or woman is of an angry and irritable character. Even when criticized a little, he is offended, becomes angry, hostile and resentful, and displays anger, hate, and bitterness. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a state of misery. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is ugly. This is the way, student, that leads to ugliness. Namely, one is of an angry and irritable character, and displays anger, hate, and bitterness. 10. But here, student, some man or woman is not of an angry and irritable character. Even when criticized a little, he is not offended, does not become angry, hostile, and resentful, and does not display anger, hate, and bitterness. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a good destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is beautiful. This is the way, student, that leads to being beautiful. Namely, one is not of an angry and irritable character, and does not display anger, hate, and bitterness. 11. Here, student, some man or woman is envious. One who envies, resents, and begrudges the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a state of misery. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is without influence. This is the way, student, that leads to being without influence. Namely, one is envious toward the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. 12. But here, student, some man or woman is not envious. One who does not envy, resent, and begrudge the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a good destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is influential. This is the way, student, that leads to being influential. Namely, one is not envious. Toward the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. 13. Here, student, some man or woman does not give food, drink, clothing, carriages, garlands, scents, unguents, beds, dwelling, and lamps to ascetics or Brahmins. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a state of misery. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is poor. This is the way, student, that leads to poverty. Namely, one does not give food and lamps to ascetics or Brahmins. 14. But here, student, some man or woman gives food and lamps to ascetics or Brahmins. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a good destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is wealthy. This is the way, student, that leads to wealth. Namely, one gives food and lamps to ascetics or Brahmins. 15. Here, student, some man or woman is obstinate and arrogant. He does not pay homage to one who should receive homage, does not rise up for one in whose presence he should rise up, does not offer a seat to one who deserves a seat, does not make way for one for whom he should make way, and does not honor, respect, revere, and venerate one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a state of misery. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is low-born. This is the way, student, that leads to low birth. Namely, one is obstinate and arrogant, and does not honor, respect, revere, and venerate one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. 16. But here, student, some man or woman is not obstinate and arrogant. He pays homage to one who should receive homage, rises up for one in whose presence he should rise up, offers a seat to one who deserves a seat, makes way for one for whom he should make way, and honors, respects, reveres, and venerates one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a good destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is high-born. This is the way, student, that leads to high birth. Namely, one is not obstinate and arrogant, and honors, respects, reveres, and venerates one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. 17. Here, student, some man or woman does not visit an ascetic or a Brahmin and ask, "Venerable sir, what is wholesome? What is unwholesome? What is blamable? What is blameless?" What should be cultivated? What should not be cultivated? What kind of action will lead to my harm and suffering for a long time? What kind of action will lead to my welfare and happiness for a long time? Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a state of misery. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is stupid. This is the way, student, that leads to stupidity. Namely, one does not visit an ascetic or Brahmin and ask such questions. 18. But here, student, some man or woman visits an ascetic or a Brahmin and asks, Venerable sir, what is wholesome? What kind of action will lead to my welfare and happiness for a long time? Because of performing and undertaking such action, he is reborn in a good destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is wise. This is the way, student, that leads to wisdom. Namely, one visits an ascetic or Brahmin and asks such questions. 19. Thus, student, the way that leads to short life makes people short-lived. The way that leads to long life makes people long-lived. The way that leads to sickliness makes people sickly. The way that leads to health makes people healthy. The way that leads to ugliness makes people ugly. The way that leads to beauty makes people beautiful. The way that leads to being uninfluential makes people uninfluential. The way that leads to being influential makes people influential. The way that leads to poverty makes people poor. The way that leads to wealth makes people wealthy. The way that leads to low birth makes people low born. The way that leads to high birth makes people high born. The way that leads to stupidity makes people stupid. The way that leads to wisdom makes people wise. 20. Beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, are bound to their actions, have their actions as their refuge. It is action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. 21. When this was said, the Brahmin student Subha, Todaya's son, said to the Blessed One, Magnificent Master Gotama! Magnificent Master Gotama! As in preceding text, Let Master Gotama accept me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge from today until life's end. Majhima Nikaya 135. Kulakama Vibhanga Sutta 3. 202 through 206. Part 2. Merit. The Key to Good Fortune. Verse 1. Meritorious Deeds. Monks, do not fear meritorious deeds. This is an expression denoting happiness, what is desirable, wished for, dear and agreeable. That is, meritorious deeds. For I know full well, monks, that for a long time I experienced desirable, wished for, dear and agreeable results from often performing meritorious deeds. Having cultivated for 7 years a mind of loving kindness, for 7 eons of contraction and expansion, I did not return to this world. Whenever the eon contracted, I reached the plane of streaming radiance. And when the eon expanded, I arose in an empty divine mansion. And there I was, Brahma, the great Brahma, the unvanquished victor, the all-seeing, the all-powerful. 36 times I was Saka, ruler of the Devas, and many hundreds of times I was a wheel-turning monarch, righteous, a king of righteousness, conqueror of the 4 regions of the earth, maintaining stability in the land, in possession of the 7 treasures. What need is there to speak of mere local kingship? It occurred to me, monks, to wonder, of what kind of deed of mine is this the fruit? Of what deeds ripening am I now of such great accomplishment and power? And then it occurred to me, it is the fruit of 3 kinds of deeds of mine, the ripening of 3 kinds of deeds, that I am now of such great accomplishment and power. Deeds of giving, of self-mastery, and of refraining. Itivutaka 22 14 through 15. Verse 2. Three bases of merit. There are, O monks, three ways of making merit. What three? There are ways of making merit by giving, by moral discipline, and by the development of meditation. There is a person who has practiced the making of merit by giving only to a limited degree, and likewise, to a limited degree, he has practiced the making of merit by moral discipline, but he has not undertaken the making of merit by meditation. With the breakup of the body after death, he will be reborn among humans in an unfavorable condition. Another person has practiced the making of merit by giving, as well as by moral discipline, to a high degree, but he has not undertaken the making of merit by meditation. With the breakup of the body after death, he will be reborn among humans in a favorable condition. Or he will be reborn in the company of the devas of the four great kings. And there the four great kings, who had practiced to a very high degree the making of merit by giving and by moral discipline, surpass the devas of their realm in 10 respects, in divine lifespan, divine beauty, divine happiness, divine fame, divine power, and in divine sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches. Or he will be reborn in the company of the Tavatisma Devas, and there Saka, ruler of the Devas, who had practiced the making of merit by giving and by moral discipline to a very high degree, surpasses the Devas of their realm in 10 respects, in divine lifespan, divine beauty, divine happiness, divine fame, divine power, and in divine sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches. Similar statements are made for rebirth among the Yama Devas, Tusita Devas, the Devas who delight in creating, the Devas who wield power over others' creations, and for the respective rulers of these realms. These monks are the three ways of making merit. Anguttara Nikaya 8:36. 4. 241 through 243. Verse 3. The best kinds of confidence. Monks, there are these four best kinds of confidence. What for? To whatever extent there are beings, whether footless or with 2 feet, 4 feet, or many feet, whether having form or formless, whether percipient, non-percipient, or neither percipient nor non-percipient, the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, is declared the best among them. Those who have confidence in the Buddha have confidence in the best, and for those who have confidence in the best, the result is best. To whatever extent there are things that are conditioned, the Noble Eightfold Path is declared the best among them. Those who have confidence in the Noble Eightfold Path have confidence in the best, and for those who have confidence in the best, the result is best. To whatever extent there are things, whether conditioned or unconditioned, dispassion is declared the best among them, that is, the crushing of pride, the removal of thirst, the uprooting of attachment, the termination of the round, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. Those who have confidence in the Dhamma have confidence in the best, and for those who have confidence in the best, the result is best. To whatever extent there are communities or groups, the Tathagata's Sangha of disciples is declared the best among them, that is, the four pairs of persons, the 8 types of individuals. This Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Those who have confidence in the Sangha have confidence in the best, and for those who have confidence in the best, the result is best. For those who have confidence as the best, for those who understand the best Dhamma, for those who have confidence in the Buddha, the unsurpassed one worthy of offerings, for those who have confidence in the Dhamma, in blissful dispassion, perfect peace, for those who have confidence in the Sangha, the field of merit unsurpassed, for those giving gifts to the best kind of merit increases, the best lifespan, beauty and fame, good reputation, happiness and strength, whether he becomes a deva or a human being, the wise one who gives of the best, concentrated upon the best Dhamma, rejoices when he has attained to the best. Anguttara Nikaya 4.34 2. 34 through 35. Part 3. Giving. Verse 1. If people knew the result of giving, O monks, if people knew, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would they allow the stain of niggardliness to obsess them and take root in their minds. Even if it were their last morsel, their last mouthful, they would not eat without having shared it, if there were someone to share it with. But monks, as people do not know, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they eat without having given, and the stain of niggardliness obsesses them and takes root in their minds. Itivutaka 26, 18 through 19. Verse 2. Reasons for giving. There are, O monks, 8 reasons for giving. What 8? People may give out of affection, or in an angry mood, or out of stupidity, or out of fear, or with the thought, such gifts have been given before by my father and grandfather, and it was done by them before, hence it would be unworthy of me to give up this old family tradition. Or with the thought, by giving this gift, I shall be reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, after death. Or with the thought, when giving this gift, my heart will be glad, and happiness and joy will arise in me. Or one gives because it ennobles and adorns the mind. Anguttara Nikaya 8.33 4. 236 through 237. Verse 3. The gift of food. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Kalayans, at a town called Sajanela. One morning, the Blessed One dressed, took his upper robe and bowl, then went to the dwelling of Supavasa, a Kalayan lady. Having arrived there, he sat down on the seat prepared for him. The Kalayan lady, Supavasa, attended to the Blessed One personally and served him with various kinds of delicious food. When the Blessed One had finished his meal and had withdrawn his hand from the bowl, the Kalayan lady, Supavasa, sat down to one side, and the Blessed One addressed her as follows. Supavasa, a noble female disciple, by giving food, gives 4 things to those who receive it. What for? She gives long life, beauty, happiness, and strength. By giving long life, she herself will be endowed with long life, human or divine. By giving beauty, she herself will be endowed with beauty, human or divine. By giving happiness, she herself will be endowed with happiness, human or divine. By giving strength, she herself will be endowed with strength, human or divine. A noble female disciple, by giving food, gives those 4 things to those who receive it. Anguttara Nikaya 4.57 2. 62 through 63. Verse 4. A superior person's gifts. There are, O monks, these 5 gifts of a superior person. What 5? He gives a gift out of faith. He gives a gift respectfully. He gives a gift at the right time. He gives a gift with a generous heart. He gives a gift without denigration. Because he gives a gift out of faith, wherever the result of that gift ripens, he becomes rich, affluent, and wealthy. And he is handsome, comely, graceful, endowed with supreme beauty of complexion. Because he gives a gift respectfully, wherever the result of that gift ripens, he becomes rich, affluent, and wealthy. And his children and wives, his slaves, messengers, and workers are obedient, lend their ears to him, and apply their minds to understand him. Because he gives a gift at the right time, wherever the result of that gift ripens, he becomes rich, affluent, and wealthy, and benefits come to him at the right time, in abundant measure. Because he gives a gift with a generous heart, wherever the result of that gift ripens, he becomes rich, affluent, and wealthy, and his mind inclines to the enjoyment of excellent things among the five chords of sensual pleasure. Because he gives a gift without denigrating himself and others, wherever the result of that gift ripens, he becomes rich, affluent, and wealthy. And no loss of his wealth takes place from any quarter, whether from fire, floods, the king, bandits, or unloved heirs. These, monks, are the five gifts of a superior person. Anguttara Nikaya, 5.148, 3.172 through 173. Verse 5. Mutual Support. Monks, Brahmins, and householders are very helpful to you. They provide you with the requisites of robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicines in time of sickness, and you, monks, are very helpful to Brahmins and householders, as you teach them the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, the middle, and the end, with the correct meaning and wording. And you proclaim the spiritual life in its fulfillment and complete purity. Thus, monks, this spiritual life is lived with mutual support for the purpose of crossing the flood and making a complete end of suffering. Iti Vutaka, 107, 111. Verse 6. Rebirth on account of giving. There are, O monks, eight kinds of rebirth on account of giving. What eight? Here, monks, a certain person makes a gift to an ascetic or a Brahmin, offering him food, drink, clothing and vehicles, garlands, scents and unguents, bedding, lodging and lighting. In making the gift, he hopes for a reward. He now notices affluent nobles, Brahmins, or householders, enjoying themselves provided and furnished with the five objects of sensual pleasure, and he thinks, "Oh, with the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn among them." And he sets his mind on that thought, keeps to it firmly, and fosters it. This thought of his aims at what is low, and if not developed to what is higher, it will lead him to just such a rebirth. With the breakup of the body, after death, he will be reborn among affluent nobles, Brahmins, or householders. This, however, I declare only for the morally pure, not for the immoral. For it is due to his purity, monks, that the heart's desire of the morally pure succeeds. Then again, a certain person makes a gift to an ascetic or a Brahmin, offering him food or lighting. In making the gift, he hopes for a reward. He now hears of the long life, the beauty and the great happiness of the Devas in the realm of the four great kings, the Tavatisma Devas, the Yama Devas, the Tusita Devas, the Devas who delight in creating, the Devas who wield power over others' creations, and he wishes to be reborn among them. He sets his mind on that thought, keeps to it firmly, and fosters it. This thought of his aims at what is low, and if not developed to what is higher, it will lead him to just such a rebirth. After his death, when his body breaks up, he will be reborn among the Devas in the realm of the four great kings, or among the Devas who wield power over others' creations. This, however, I declare only for the morally pure, not for the immoral. For it is due to his purity, monks, that the heart's desire of the morally pure succeeds. Then again, a certain person makes a gift to an ascetic or a Brahmin, offering him food or lighting. He now hears of the long life, the beauty, and the great happiness of the Devas of Brahma's company, and he wishes to be reborn among them. He sets his mind on that thought, keeps to it firmly, and fosters it. This thought of his aims at what is low, and if not developed to what is higher, it will lead him to just such a rebirth. After his death, when his body breaks up, he will be reborn among the Devas of Brahma's company. This, however, I declare only for the morally pure, not for the immoral, only for one free of lust, not for one who is lustful. Because he is without lust, monks, the heart's desire of the morally pure succeeds. These, monks, are the eight kinds of rebirth on account of giving. Anguttara Nikaya, 8.35. 4. 239 through 241. Part 4. Moral Discipline. Verse 1. the five precepts. There are, O monks, eight streams of merit, streams of the wholesome nourishments of happiness, that are heavenly, ripening in happiness, conducive to heaven, and that lead to whatever is wished for, loved and agreeable, to one's welfare and happiness. What are the eight? Here, monks, a noble disciple has gone for refuge to the Buddha. This is the first stream of merit, stream of the wholesome nourishment of happiness that is heavenly, ripening in happiness, conducive to heaven, and that leads to whatever is wished for, loved, and agreeable, to one's welfare and happiness. Further, a noble disciple has gone for refuge to the Dhamma. This is the second stream of merit that leads to whatever is wished for, loved and agreeable, to one's welfare and happiness. Further, a noble disciple has gone for refuge to the Sangha. This is the third stream of merit that leads to whatever is wished for, loved and agreeable, to one's welfare and happiness. There are, further, monks, these five gifts, pristine, of long standing, traditional, ancient, unadulterated, and never before adulterated, that are not being adulterated, and that will not be adulterated, not despised by wise ascetics and Brahmins. What are these five gifts? Here, monks, a noble disciple gives up the destruction of life and abstains from it. By abstaining from the destruction of life, the noble disciple gives to immeasurable beings freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. By giving to immeasurable beings freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression, he himself will enjoy immeasurable freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. This is the first of those great gifts and the fourth stream of merit. Further, monks, a noble disciple gives up the taking of what is not given and abstains from it. By abstaining from taking what is not given, the noble disciple gives to immeasurable beings freedom from fear. This is the second of those great gifts and the fifth stream of merit. Further, monks, a noble disciple gives up sexual misconduct and abstains from it. By abstaining from sexual misconduct, the noble disciple gives to immeasurable beings freedom from fear. This is the third of those great gifts and the sixth stream of merit. Further, monks, a noble disciple gives up false speech and abstains from it. By abstaining from false speech, the noble disciple gives to immeasurable beings freedom from fear. This is the fourth of those great gifts and the seventh stream of merit. Further, monks, a noble disciple gives up wines, liquors, and intoxicants, the basis for negligence, and abstains from them. By abstaining from wines, liquors, and intoxicants, the noble disciple gives to immeasurable beings freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. By giving to immeasurable beings freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression, he himself will enjoy immeasurable freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression. This is the fifth of those great gifts and the eighth stream of merit. These, monks, are the eight streams of merit, streams of the wholesome nourishments of happiness, which are heavenly, ripening in happiness, conducive to heaven, and which lead to whatever is wished for, loved, and agreeable, to one's welfare and happiness. Anguttara Nikaya, 839. 4. 245 through 247. Verse 2. The Uposatha Observance. When, O monks, the Uposatha observance is complete in eight factors, it is of great fruit and benefit, luminous and pervasive. And how is the Uposatha observance complete in eight factors? Here, monks, a noble disciple reflects thus. As long as they live, the arahants abandon the destruction of life, abstain from the destruction of life, with the rod and weapon laid aside. They are conscientious and merciful, and dwell compassionate toward all living beings. Today, I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. I will imitate the arahants in this respect, and the Uposatha observance will be fulfilled by me. This is the first factor it possesses. Further, he reflects, as long as they live, the Arahants abandon the taking of what is not given, abstain from taking what is not given. They accept only what is given, expect only what is given, and dwell with honest hearts devoid of theft. Today I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. This is the second factor it possesses. As long as they live, the Arahants abandon sexual relations and observe celibacy, living apart, refraining from the coarse practice of sexual intercourse. Today I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. This is the third factor it possesses. As long as they live, the Arahants abandon false speech, abstain from false speech. They are speakers of truth, adherents of truth, trustworthy and reliable, no deceivers of the world. Today I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. This is the fourth factor it possesses. As long as they live, the Arahants abandon wines, liquors, and intoxicants, the basis of negligence, and abstain from them. Today I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. This is the fifth factor it possesses. As long as they live, the Arahants eat only one meal a day and refrain from eating at night, outside the proper time. Today I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. This is the sixth factor it possesses. As long as they live, the Arahants abstain from dancing, singing, instrumental music, and unsuitable shows, and from adorning themselves by wearing garlands and applying scents and ointments. Today, I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. This is the seventh factor it possesses. As long as they live, the Arahants abandon the use of high and luxurious beds and seats, and abstain from using them. They make use of low resting places, either small beds or straw mats. Today, I too, for this day and night, will do likewise. I will imitate the Arahants in this respect, and the Uposatha observance will be fulfilled by me. This is the eighth factor it possesses. When, monks, the Uposatha observance is complete in these eight factors, it is of great fruit and benefit, luminous and pervasive. And to what extent is it of great fruit and benefit, luminous and pervasive? Suppose, monks, someone were to exercise sovereignty and dominion over these 16 great countries abounding in the seven precious treasures, that is, Anga, Magadha, Kasi, Kosala, the Vajis, the Malas, the Setis, Vamsa, the Kurus, the Pankalas, Makcha, Surasena, Asaka, Avanti, Gandhara, and Cambodia. This would not be worth a 16th part of the Uposatha observance complete in those eight factors. For what reason? Because human kingship is poor compared to divine happiness. For the devas in the realm of the four great kings, a single day and night is equivalent to 50 human years. 30 such days make up a month, and 12 such months make up a year. The lifespan of the devas in the realm of the four great kings is 500 such celestial years. It is possible, monks, that if some man or woman here observes the Uposatha complete in these eight factors, with the breakup of the body after death, they will be reborn in the company of the devas in the realm of the four great kings. It was with reference to this that I said human kingship is poor compared to divine happiness. For the Tavatimsa devas, a single day and night is equivalent to 100 human years. The lifespan of the Tavatimsa devas is 1,000 such celestial years. For the Yama devas, a single day and night is equivalent to 200 human years. The lifespan of the Yama devas is 2,000 such celestial years. For the Tusita devas, a single day and night is equivalent to 400 human years. The lifespan of the Tusita devas is 4,000 such celestial years. For the devas who delight in creating, a single day and night is equivalent to 800 human years. The lifespan of the devas who delight in creating is 8,000 such celestial years. For the devas who wield power over others' creation, a single day and night is equivalent to 1,600 human years. 30 such days make up a month, and 12 such months make up a year. The lifespan of the devas who wield power over others' creation is 16,000 celestial years. It is possible, monks, that if some man or woman here observes the Uposatha complete in these 8 factors, with the breakup of the body after death, they will be reborn in the company of the devas who wield power over others' creations. It was with reference to this that I said human kingship is poor compared to divine happiness. Anguttara Nikaya, 8:41. 4. 248 through 251. Part 5. Meditation. Verse 1. The development of loving kindness. Monks, whatever grounds there are for making merit productive of a future birth, all these do not equal a 16th part of the liberation of mind by loving kindness. The liberation of mind by loving kindness surpasses them and shines forth, bright and brilliant. Just as the radiance of all the stars does not equal a 16th part of the moon's radiance, but the moon's radiance surpasses them and shines forth, bright and brilliant. Even so, whatever grounds there are for making merit productive of a future birth, all these do not equal a 16th part of the liberation of mind by loving kindness. The liberation of mind by loving kindness surpasses them and shines forth bright and brilliant. Just as in the last month of the rainy season, in the autumn, when the sky is clear and free of clouds, the sun, on ascending, dispels the darkness of space and shines forth bright and brilliant. Even so, whatever grounds there are for making merit productive of a future birth, all these do not equal a 16th part of the liberation of mind by loving kindness. The liberation of mind by loving kindness surpasses them and shines forth, bright and brilliant. And just as in the night, at the moment of dawn, the morning star shines forth, bright and brilliant, even so, whatever grounds there are for making merit productive of a future birth, all these do not equal a 16th part of the liberation of mind by loving kindness. The liberation of mind by loving kindness surpasses them and shines forth, bright and brilliant. Iti Vutaka, 27, 19 through 21. Verse 2. The Four Divine Abodes. 22. The Brahmin student Subha, Todeya's son, said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, I have heard that the ascetic Gotama knows the path to the company of Brahma. What do you think, student? Is the village of Nalakara near here, not far from here? Yes, sir. The village of Nalakara is near here, not far from here. What do you think, student? Suppose there was a man born and raised in the village of Nalakara, and as soon as he had left Nalakara, they asked him about the path to the village. Would that man be slow or hesitant in answering? No, Master Gotama. Why is that? Because the man has been born and raised in Nalakara, and is well acquainted with all the paths to the village. Still, a man born and raised in the village of Nalakara might be slow or hesitant in answering when asked about the path to the village. But a Tathagata, when asked about the Brahma world or the way leading to the Brahma world, would never be slow or hesitant in answering. I understand Brahma, and I understand the Brahma world, and I understand the way leading to the Brahma world, and I understand how one should practice to be reborn in the Brahma world. 23. Master Gotama, I have heard that the ascetic Gotama teaches the path to the company of Brahma. It would be good if Master Gotama would teach me the path to the company of Brahma. Then, student, listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, sir, he replied. The Blessed One said this. 24. What, student, is the path to the company of Brahma? Here a monk dwells, pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around and everywhere, and to all as to himself. He dwells pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. When the liberation of mind by loving kindness is developed in this way, no limiting action remains there. None persists there. Just as a vigorous trumpeter could make himself heard without difficulty in the four quarters, so too, when the liberation of mind by loving kindness is developed in this way, no limiting action remains there. None persists there. This is the path to the company of Brahma. 25 through 27. Again, a monk dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion, with a mind imbued with altruistic joy, with a mind imbued with equanimity. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with equanimity, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. When the liberation of mind by equanimity is developed in this way, no limiting action remains there. None persists there. Just as a vigorous trumpeter could make himself heard without difficulty in the four quarters, so too, when the liberation of mind by equanimity is developed in this way, no limiting action remains there. None persists there. This too is the path to the company of Brahma. From Majjhima Nikaya 99, Subha Sutta 2, 206 through 208. Verse 3. Insight surpasses all. The Buddha said to Anathapindika, "In the past, householder, there was a Brahmin named Vilama. He gave such a great alms offering as this, 84,000 bowls of gold filled with silver, 84,000 bowls of silver filled with gold, 84,000 bronze bowls filled with bullion, 84,000 elephants, chariots, milk cows, maidens, and couches, many millions of fine cloths, and indescribable amounts of food, drink, ointment, and bedding. As great as was the alms offering that the Brahmin Vilama gave, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single person possessed of right view. As great as the Brahmin Vilama's alms offering was, and though one would feed 100 persons possessed of right view, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single once-returner. As great as the Brahmin Vilama's alms offering was, and though one would feed 100 once-returners, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single non-returner. As great as the Brahmin Vilama's alms offering was, and though one would feed 100 non-returners, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single arahant. As great as the Brahmin Vilama's alms offering was, and though one would feed 100 arahants, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single Paskeka Buddha. As great as the Brahmin Vilama's alms offering was, and though one would feed 100 Paskeka Buddhas, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single perfectly enlightened Buddha. It would be even more fruitful if one would feed the Sangha of monks headed by the Buddha and build a monastery for the sake of the Sangha of the Four Quarters. It would be even more fruitful if, with a trusting mind, one would go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and would undertake the five precepts, abstaining from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, and from the use of intoxicants. As great as all this might be, it would be even more fruitful if one would develop a mind of loving kindness, even for the time it takes to pull a cow's udder. And as great as all this might be, it would be even more fruitful still if one would develop the perception of impermanence, just for the time it takes to snap one's fingers." Anguttara Nikaya 9:20, abridged, 4, 393 through 396.